Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the SmackDown Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett to review Friday night SmackDown and a very eventful show yet again.
Super eventful. This show had it all, for better and worse, with present-day WWE, especially WrestleMania season WWE. I would classify this show as having no less than three hot angles. Mm-hmm. One match that would like classify as one of the best in WWE's week, and then one that was one of the worst in WWE's year. It just had it all. I'm really into these WWE shows lately. I know we always talk about the bar and the curve, and it's real, and I sometimes think, should it be? Like, should we, how long into the Triple H run should we be just saying, right, now, hang on, if we're rating WWE as vastly improved from when Vince McMahon had the keys, at what point do we say, well, if it's improved, it's on AEW's curve and on AEW's grid. Yeah. But what I got out of this is something that I feel has been lacking. I don't know, you know, to pull back the curtain yet, I don't know what you and Sidgwick are going to say about Rampage. But my general feeling over the high-quality Dynamites lately has been that that show has sustained itself when the wrestling's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, those, the ones, the episodes this year that have been truly great were mostly the ones when Bryan Danielson was running the gauntlet.
Yeah.
Because you had a guaranteed 4.5-star match and something else on the card that just really pulled you in. SmackDown and Raw don't ever guarantee that. You get them, you do get the good matches, and there's one on this episode, but it's never a guarantee. But I believe WWE's angle game is miles beyond AEW at this point. Truly, honestly, like, so maybe the bar should be this, maybe the bar should be raised, maybe the curve should be different, because I just watched this SmackDown, and like I say, three WrestleMania programs given attention in ways that I thought were super creative. One was absolutely white hot in the building again, like, for the second time in a wrestling week, as it was on Raw, it was white hot, the main event angle, white hot in the building. The other two, really hot in these crowds that are otherwise silent, often, like, funeral quiet, these WWE crowds. And it's probably just the time of year, but in terms of quantity and quality, I think WWE's got the measure on angles at the moment, and I think the SmackDown was a good exhibition of that.
I adore SmackDown now. It's a staple thing Saturday morning before I get up, before I have toast or tea or anything like that. First thing I do is watch SmackDown, because I don't want anything to be spoiled for me.
Yeah.
That's a sign of how much I love this show. Compare that to Rampage that I watched on my lunch break today and I've already forgotten about.
This feels like a review spoiler.
No, it was a completely fine show, but instantly forgettable, aside from one announcement from the best thing on the show, who is more sort of Ring of Honor than anything else, really. But more on that in the Rampage review with Sidgwick a little bit later on. Yeah, in comparison to that, I watched this Saturday morning, and I could turn my laptop around and not even need to look at my notes to tell you what happened on some of the major events of this. Although, like you said, there is one match on this show that I, as you know, to save time, busy life I've got, I often double speed the wrestling shows. And one match, I thought, oh, I must have forgotten to turn the double speed on for this, because this is going to seemingly take place underwater.
Everybody thought this. I saw four tweets that all got shared with that same line of thinking, with a different upload of the clip. And I wasn't one of those tweets. I just saw them. And then me and you had a conversation this morning where you said the same thing. We'll get to it, I suppose. But my God.
Was Ronda Rousey a really good SmackDown Women's Champion?
It's it's starting to look like that.
It's the Meg, it's the thing, Meg
Griffin,
isn't it?
Isn't it? Like the, that title ring get less terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a second. Ronda's most recent SmackDown Women's Championship reign.
Hey. You all right?
When you weren't at the time, but Jesus, compared
is
to
your
this,
laptop okay?
It's going to take off, yeah.
Is that going to come through the microphones or not?
Probably.
I feel like, so, you know, when do you have any in your house? Because ours is quite a new build. Do you have any of those bathroom lights that knock on the automatic extractor fan?
Yes.
We have one of them in one of ours. We got two bugs, mate. And you flick the light the extractor fan comes on. And then all of a sudden you try and have a conversation. It's normally me to my wife. Well, like, I'll try and start a conversation and I know full well she's not going to be able to hear it. So I'll just keep saying it. Like, just give me a minute. No, I'm getting my point out. Like, at work, Wilbon lets me say whatever I want. Yeah. So you should be able to listen now.
If you don't want me to go out with the lads, speak up.
I'll see you later.
See you in 2 days. So this show opened with a brilliant video package yet again, recapping the angle with Jay and Jimmy and Sammy, obviously, from Monday Night Raw and the betrayal. And then the Usos arrive. I love that that's just a staple now of SmackDown. SmackDown opens... not with the big graphics or not with a big an opening show promo or a big match. It's just always, the Usos are here. Or the Bloodline's here.
Yeah.
So they pull up. Paul Heyman is the happiest dad in the world. He hugs them. Jay's like, all right, where's Roman? Mm-hmm. And he's like, all you need to know is he's as proud as you as I am. So never mind where he is. Because he's a gaslighting prick. He says, all right, well, when you find out where he is, tell him I'm here. And then, hi, Kayla! Wanders up and says, what happened on Monday? And he's like, I'll say everything I need to say in the ring tonight. And Jimmy's like, never mind all that. Why is Cody Rhodes up in the Bloodlines business? LTST, baby.
Great stuff here.
Breadcrumbs.
I don't think the quality of this opening thing should be undersold, right? The Bloodline arrive and we know we have to kind of accept how wrestling works is that, why aren't they already? But this, as you say, that's how shows open when the big stars are here. And right now, the Usos don't even really need Roman or Solo. And it's not even by association with Roman Reigns. They're in this big angle, and them arriving is a big deal in and of itself. But the fact that they frame this first, so you had to watch Jey Uso get out the car, and you're kind of staring intently at his face as a fan, trying to work out what he's thinking. Mm. Then he sees Paul Heyman, and you see his face, and you have a good sense of where Jey Uso's motivations are, and he's going to flesh those out in the ring. And Jimmy Uso was great to watch here because he was kind of painting on this smile when Jay and Paul Heyman had that awkward hug, that awkward moment
that
together.
With the smiling face behind the crying.
Yeah. Tears. He's like, yeah, it's all good, ? And then when they speak to Kayla, Jay's all bored up because he's like, this is my moment. I've got to fight for the decision I made and stand by my brother, which is the whole reason I've made the decision in the first place. A lot got established in this, indeed, establishing moment ahead of the main event promo later on. And Cody getting name checked was useful then for 2 hours later. Because unlike, do you know where SmackDown was based? I can't remember.
Pittsburgh.
Was it in Pittsburgh? So the building in Pittsburgh, obviously, the gap between the toilets and the ring is smaller than Daly's place. Because there was that time where he was getting called out there to say he was in the shower or something, was it?
So Something like that.
Not the case here.
I'm trying to look this up now. Oh, I was right.
I think it was.
PPG Paints Arena, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
The PPG. There's a lot of P's. It's a lot of alliteration. Artless people that name that arena.
Speaking of alliteration, I've saved a little something for a little bit later on that I guarantee, if he hears about it, and I wonder if anyone's going to snitch tag him, he's going to annoy Sidgwick. But, well, we'll get to that in due course.
Okay.
I did think at the start of this, when he came in and went, oh, where's Roman? And it was like, Roman's not here, mate. He doesn't give a toss. You've done what he needed you to do, so why would he bother turn up? He doesn't need to kill Jimmy anymore.
Yeah.
I watched that and thought, well, I'm not going to feel too sorry for you. You've made your bed, sort of thing. And the fact that he managed to change my opinion of that later on speaks to how well this was laid out on this show.
What a disrespectful piece of garbage bitch Roman Reigns is as well. Best. Like, they continue to absolutely nail this heel version of him. When he's not there, I think I hate him more than when he's in the building.
Mm.
Brilliant.
So then we got a 5-way to see who gets killed by Gunther at WrestleMania. It was Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, L.A. Knight.
Yeah.
He's got to be on the card somehow.
Hope so.
He's so over. The amount of things I see people sharing with us on Twitter from live shows and even just SmackDown stuff, got to be doing something with.
Fair's fair, you know, like, especially in the last 2-3 minutes of this, because the fans were pretty quiet for most of it. I'd say, like, four of the guys in this were really over.
Xavier Woods and Karrion Kross made up the rest of the men in this match. I thought they did really well in how they've laid this out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I can call what happens this week as well, mm-hmm. but we'll get to that. So they clear out the ring, and of course that leaves Drew McIntyre and Sheamus to go face to face. And as they argue, the unorthodox team of LA Knight, and Karrion Kross, team up to take them out, to take us to a break when we come back. They're working together on Woods. Sheamus pulls Knight out of the ring. Kross saves him there, and they work together to take out Drew and Sheamus at ringside. McIntyre fires back up, but again, the weird duo take him out. That allows Sheamus, though, to catch them off guard with a nice flying crossbody. Kross catches Sheamus in a half crab as Knight hits a neck breaker on McIntyre. As always happens, Kross breaks up Knight's pin attempt. That alliance is over straight away. They turn on each other. That opens the door for Xavier Woods to come in and run wild and hit that amazing flying elbow of his on LA Knight. But, I mean, just everyone broke up the pinfall at that point. And as they go to another commercial, out comes Imperium with Gunther, of course, to have a look at who they could be facing at WrestleMania. Then there was a great spot when we came back. Kross has put McIntyre in the Tree of Woe. Knight, I think, is trying to superplex Kross, and McIntyre does that sit-up thing of his.
Yeah.
Suplexes Knight, who superplexes Kross. I think that was how it worked.
Ended up like an elevated superplex, basically, off Drew, didn't it?
It looked like he sucked, is what he looked like to take, I mean. Sheamus gets in, hits a slam on Knight, and then just, I think it was Woods, Kross, and Knight get the 10 beats of the Bodhran.
Yeah. This is where it really picked up.
Yeah, really hot finish this. Sheamus goes for the bro kick on LA Knight, but McIntyre cuts him off. So then Sheamus hits the bro kick on Woods. McIntyre hits Knight with a claymore. 1, 2, 3. And there was, I couldn't do that at the same time because I haven't got two voices, but there's two pinfalls going on at the same time.
Two referees. Because two referees. The second referee that was there for Imperium.
And, slid in, And they've both countered pinfalls, and both Sheamus and McIntyre get their hands raised, and there's a huge triple threat chant.
It's not a screwy finish when an arena full of people don't feel screwed.
Mm.
That's what happened here. Me and Sid did the preview on Friday, and we were trying to arrive at a way in which a triple threat would be not just obviously the way that this was going to play out, but a satisfying conclusion.
Mm.
You know, they have those ones that time. I always think of Kane, Undertaker, and Austin, where the whole point is Austin's got to lose and Vince doesn't care who wins. So they kind of both lean on his back. What are you doing here? I'm pinning Austin. And they lean on him and they both get the pin together. This was a far more creative solution to that problem.
Yes.
Because, again, it doesn't ever hurt to reestablish the claymore and the bro kick as the death blows of these giant men.
They should do that thing that they had with Sheamus and Big Show, where they measured the impact of them on a big, light square or something.
I like that. That could be the, the progressive match flow of the week thing, where just there's a zoom in, like the Predator-type zoom on the boot as, like, Drew hits the claymore.
It's like those lads who get pissed up and, you know, that punching bag in the pub.
Yeah.
I've never punched one of those.
No, I've never thrown a punch in anger, I don't think. I've been very fortunate enough to not be in any fights. I got hit from behind in the back of the head once.
I got punched in the throat once whilst I was trying to break up a fight. Swung for someone else and hit me in the throat. Christmas, I think, as well, in Chesterfield.
Is that like an actor that, like, no, please not the face? So he was like, not the... It's my livelihood.
Still do accents.
Did they heard you on free radio? They were like, enough of this.
For the good of the people.
I want traffic and travel for somebody else.
Aren't those things like a quid a go as well? All I see is pissed up people trying to flex.
Look, anyone that listens to this podcast and might enjoy those, I'm not trying to like take away your fun. But I grew up like for English listeners will understand this, like when I say Scarborough. But for the American listeners, it's a very, very, very UK coastal town. Your people go there for their British beach holidays.
A bit like Atlantic City.
Yeah, perfect example. It's a beach, but it's still kind of cold and grey.
Yeah.
But it's somewhere to go if you don't.
Can we go to the beach? We've got a beach at home. Yeah. Beach at home is Scarborough.
That's it, pretty much. And you would often see, you'd go to the arcades and just try and make a quid last. That was my dad's rule.
Yeah.
Get it changed into tens, get it changed into twos,
two
whatever.
Two Bs for me.
But big burly.
Not made of money.
Big burly blokes. Drinking cans would like fill it full of pounds and have like competitions trying to get the best score, and I'm pretty sure the number was gimmicked anyway, so like, you know, I'm sure it wasn't a perfect formula where you smash it. I'm sure the idea was like, I don't know, like 75, I'm gonna have another go, 72. I'm sure there's some machine gun loser, put another quid in.
Yeah,
like I didn't like them. What are we talking about? The five win.
Oh yes,
really liked a lot of stuff here, even if the fans kind of only came up for the last few minutes. I really like the callback in, so Sheamus and Drew having the face-off where everybody else is fighting is a nice callback to Sheamus and Gunther when it was the Brawling Brutes and Imperium, mm-hmm. where they loved that bit and all the scrapping's going on. And it like makes the two people in the middle like look like this kind of monolithic visual of like the two almost like statuesque figures that have got mm-hmm. a fight. So that was superb. Didn't mind the minimizing of Cross, LA Knight and Xavier Woods for the two finishes because like the week before in setting up this match, Drew and Sheamus were positioned as the biggest threats to Gunther. And it's worked because if the fans are chanting triple threat, there's two things there. Number one, they are actively campaigning for a match that's historically worse than a singles one. That's yeah. so impressive that WWE have arrived at a point where like people want a version that is theoretically weaker than the good one. Right, that's so. How much have we said? Yeah, Drew's fine, whatever. But like Sheamus in one more go at WrestleMania would be so cool.
Yeah,
like the stakes would feel higher because they had this legendary battle last year. Two good matches actually, but apparently not. Like this live crowd is evidence that they've nailed the like the sort of the run up to this triple threat. I mean, who knows? Maybe they'll solve this mess on SmackDown this week. But I have a sense they won't. I feel like what we're being shown here is what we're going to get.
Yeah,
and this was evidence that what they're given is what people want. Like I don't think I've ever heard a triple threat chant ever. There was a pay per view called Fatal Four Way. Nobody chanted for that. Oof. You know, like I just thought this was so impressive. And Sheamus hitting the beats of the Bodrin was one of those moments, like on everybody, was one of those moments where a crowd that were kind of not really arsed, they were just watching the key spots and waiting for a finish, were drawn into like the physicality. They believe him.
Mm. I was just thinking the South Park bit of like, I'm in a team with myself, which means the only person I can trust is myself. I've hit the 10 beats of the bodger on everybody. Except for myself.
It's a Reddit thread. That's how we retire.
Let's talk about this all in one go, actually, because I've got a smoking hot take, but that's going to have to be saved for the SmackDown preview this week.
Okay.
So, yeah, later on in the show, there was the argument, like you say, with Drew and Sheamus arguing and Butch and Ridge Bloody Holland having to come in and separate them. And then, where was this later on in the show? Yeah, Imperium go and see Postman Pierce. Gunther's very adamant. One challenger, you said, for my title. One. So Pierce books Drew McIntyre and Sheamus for next week, which is just, yeah, fascinating development. And, well, we'll talk, I suppose, more about that on the SmackDown preview.
It's good. It's good booking, I think, because I'm not so sure they can lose here. Mm. Fans have chanted for a triple threat. So what would typically be the, right, how are we going to get to the out? Isn't an out as far as this crowd. And me, actually. I think I want the triple threat now as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be a bit of a hypocrite on the SmackDown preview, but you have to listen to that to find out why.
I can't imagine that.
Anyway.
That's never come up. Especially not when we're discussing WWE.
Paul Heyman's hanging out with his best friend, Kayla Braxton. she asks about Jay's decision, and Heyman's like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Cody Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
He says Cody's been getting involved in bloodline business. Now, that's family. It's been nearly 1,000 days, which sounds really awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
That Roman Reigns has been the champion. And then for every new challenger Roman has, he asks the wise man for his advice. Do they lie and manipulate someone so they get broken by lies and deception before the match starts? Or do they use the truth? And the truth is the bloodline can't be stopped when they're aligned. Cody, yes, is a nightmare for Roman stylistically. And therefore Roman was like, so what do we do? Lies, truth, what are you thinking, Paul? And then Roman actually came to the realisation, obviously because he's the smartest guy in the room and the best and not a gaslighting prick. He says the most evil thing we could do is smash Cody with the truth. And the truth is that his past will weigh him down so much that by the time they reach WrestleMania, he'll already be beaten. The only story Cody's going to have is picking his shoulders up off the mat after losing and then pick the time and place to truthfully acknowledge Roman Reigns.
Brilliant. Brilliant again.
Like the word Smith, Paul Heyman, hot take.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. The Cody Rhodes feud is the best use of Paul Heyman we've had in quite a long time. Certainly it's the least. Not that, like, Heyman with Roman has been so much better than the latter years of Heyman with Brock. But even then, he was falling into a bit of a generic pattern with Roman Reigns. And I just think that's completely dissolved since the bloodline got really hot. And he's found a new gear with this Cody Rhodes program. This promo, far from being the only thing on this show, let alone in the last 3 or 4 weeks of television, has established this WrestleMania main event as, you know, like that old...
Okay.
Yeah, that immovable force Versus
Unstoppable Force meets the Immovable Object.
Thank you. That used to be saved for like giants. Yes. That's a Brock Roman tagline,
yeah, exactly,
isn't it? It's not like Roman is the Immovable Object, Cody is the Unstoppable Force. That man comes back from a broken tit and wins the Rumble. That is an Unstoppable Force. Like, Cody, look at him. The man cannot be stopped. And yet Roman, 1,000 days in, feels immovable. It's title match. Sorry. It's f***ing brilliant.
Yes.
Like, it is absolutely what you watch for. Like, I cannot say enough good things about this. We'll get into this more in the main event, but we knew it. We had all had a good gut feeling before Elimination Chamber when you had that 1-2 punch of Cody and Roman having Cody and Paul Heyman having the first showdown, and then Cody kind of giving Sammy the "I hope you win."
Mm.
I've already encountered a little taste of the Bloodline, and I don't think I like it.
No.
So I'd rather let's me and you, mano a mano, have a title match, and he's not got on his way there. And the way in which, like, how delicately Cody has been woven into this, from where we were at let's say, the Royal Rumble, right, when Cody wins the match, and all he's got to do is point at a sign, and if he wanted to, it could be, "I'm going to go to the gym. I'll see, like, I'm going to become the fittest, best Cody Rhodes, and I'll see you at WrestleMania." And you buy it, and, you know, it's coming back from an injury and whatever, and in the meantime, all the melodrama of that closing segment with Roman and Kevin and Sammy and all that, it's like, wow. Like, these two things can't collide because one, the melodrama will overwhelm Cody's magic story. So we'll just keep these worlds, especially on different brands. Bloodline was mainly SmackDown, Cody was Raw. The temptation to just have, like, man, like, in the background, Cody's, like, working harder than ever on the weightlifting and all that sort of thing. Meanwhile, Roman's been distracted by this Sammy diversion, and they've braved it. They've put the two together, and it is merged absolutely perfectly. And I think we got, again, more, like, illustration of that in the main event as well.
Mm.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now, some people say that that is the only good storyline in WWE right now. And to them, I say, look what came next, because it was time to find out who's going into the Hall of Fame this year in 2023.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
How did we not see this coming? This is credit to WWE that I've said that sentence, I reckon, every week for about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Whether it be the Gargano thing in NXT, for example. Mm-hmm. Or many developments on Raw and things like that. But this one was just absolutely genius. It's a lovely touch, obviously, to have Conan inducting him as well. Yeah. And just shows you how far WWE have come that they'll allow something like that to happen.
Was it Cornette that was there the other year, mm-hmm. inducting somebody? Yeah, they kind of break their own rules a bit for the Hall of Fame, don't they?
And yes, the first inductee with a great video package to remind you just how great he is in the ring, less so outside of it being a father, obviously.
Yeah.
Rey Mysterio is the first inductee in 2023. Rey Mysterio comes out. He obviously quite rightly gets a "You deserve it" chant. And he goes to address the crowd. Before he can say literally anything, he's interrupted by the guys who, well, collectively, they're in the fucking Judgment Day. Yeah. And
which is weird because they're like Raw wrestlers, but on Friday they're on.
And Don comes out and says, "I can't believe you've done this."
This was the one thing we didn't want to happen.
He says, you missed all these holidays. You missed all my birthdays. You make this bloody Hall of Fame career. Is it? Was this the point where he says, the only Hall of Fame you deserve to be in is for deadbeat dads?
I want to look at that. I need the Deadbeat Dad Hall of Fame. I mean, I'm worried that I get inducted, but I want to see the Deadbeat Dad Hall of Fame.
And he said, Rhea's right. Mammy's right. I'm ashamed to be your son. And out come Legado del Fantasma. I do like the way they've weaved these in as a sort of stopgap of like, well, we can't just do every week. Let's have a fight. Let's have a bare-knuckle fight then.
We spotted this when they had that digital exclusive. Remember mm-hmm. that with the mask? And like that, the only reason them two wrestled together in that four-way, it turns out, was to create all of this. That's booking.
A great six-man followed it as well. Yeah, because yeah. out comes the guys and Santos Escobar says, disrespectful little prick. You know, Ray might let these sort of things go because you're his son, even though you're a bit of a bastard. We were meant to have a match later, but you know what? Let's have it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Judgment Day. Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and Dominic Mysterio versus Legado del Fantasma, Santos Escobar, Joaquin Wilde, and one of the best-named wrestlers in wrestling right now. I love Cruz del Toro's
Cruz
name.
Del Toro.
With Zelina Vega there, Ray Mysterio there, and of course, Mammy. Really fast-paced, understandably, with the guys in this match. Judgment Day early on, take control and manage to isolate Del Toro. And then they beat down Joaquin Wild when he comes in and then knock Escobar and Del Toro off the apron. And they're just dominating as we go to a break. When we come back, though, Escobar comes in and runs Wild. There's a drop kick from Joaquin Wild. And then Del Toro and Escobar hit double suicide dives onto Balor and Priest.
Oh, my God.
And Zelina Vega tries to get involved, but Ripley blocks Hurricanrana and then just throws her onto Escobar and Wild again.
Oh, my God.
Ray gets in Rhea Ripley's face at this point. So Dominic takes advantage. He's in the ring with Del Toro.
Yeah, Del Toro was.
And he hits a sliding drop kick onto Ray, who goes, you little slides in. That takes the referee. It looks like Del Toro, well, Del Toro does have the match won, basically, but Damian Priest comes in and just nails Cruz Del Toro with a kick. Dominic pins him. 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Dominic gets rid of the rest of the Judgment Day. He says he wants to address his father. This is the bit where he said, you should be in the Hall of Fame for deadbeat dads. I do apologise. He'd saved that for later. And then he said, I should really have been Eddie's son. I wish I was.
Oh, God.
And Ray's like, all right, we've said a lot here, but take that back. And Dom's like, no, I'm not going to take it back. Unless you hit me. Please, please, please hit me. Ray's like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to strike my son. Dominic charges at him, and Ray doesn't hit him, but forces him out of the ring by dodging him, and Dominic spills to the outside. Ray's yelling, I'll not fight you. I'll never fight you. And Dom's like, you will.
Yes, you will. God damn it, man. I'm sick. I am sick of everybody assuming just because me and you called every single detail of the story from way back in 2019, the assumption that the enjoyment of this is ironic.
Nope.
Dominic Mysterio is fantastic in this role. Dominic Mysterio, am I going to do it? I think I am. If this was on Dynamite,
wow.
Dominic Mysterio would be getting praise for his work as an improved promo in this heel persona. This
he
idea,
has come on leaps and bounds.
This idea that like...
There's a low bar, but...
Wow. A booker, as Tony Khan has done, to his immense credit, over and over again, found the role for the wrestler that has given that wrestler the confidence and the self-belief to show themselves in a way that they've not been either in AEW or in WWE or wherever they've been seen, this ability that he had, whether it be pairing people together, whether it be just like giving them the, or helping them along with a gimmick or a story or a character that they bounce off. So many times we've seen it in AEW, and it's like a real credit to promotion and performer. It's
absolutely
the real collaboration of it all. It's happening. It is happening in front of your eyes. We are not... Well, I don't want to speak for you, or Cedric for that matter. I'm
Please
just
saying, do for the, on this
I
topic.
Am not watching this anymore. Don't we like the stupid idiots in purple? Yes, but all of them are absolutely excelling, and we are long, long past the point where it's just like that type... Like, Clash at the Castle when Dominic first turns and leaves his trainer up, Ray's Jaxi. Judgment Day immediately make a
Edge's
meme.
Edge's Jaxi,
excuse me. Immediately make a meme of it by pissing themselves laughing. And you could argue right there, Well, at least they're having fun with it.
Yes. Time for
everything since then, nah. Like, you're just seeing high-quality work. Finn Balor and his one silver leg, when they all came out to defend Rhea, just pulling faces and flexing at them. Well, like,
if I had that body, I'd that's what I'd do every day.
Yeah, quite right as well. He's deserving that.
Like, family wedding. Come on, everyone, pose for the photo.
And proof, if proof be need be, that the Judgment Day are right up there, an upper tier WWE act, without question. What happens in WWE when you actually get, and this, frankly, this used to be like, you know, like gold dust in WWE. I don't mean Dustin Runnels, although hopefully Cody gets him back in time for something. Like, this used to be gold dust in WWE, where there would be one over act. It was hard enough to find one over act. But when you got one, the last thing you thought was, you know what we should do with that one over act, is try and help them get other acts over, because it was so, like, Becky Lynch being a perfect example. Becky Lynch is super over. She's the main eventer. Should we stick with Lacey Evans? That's how we do business. Nah, because you can't protect anyone anymore. So if anything, that's going to drag Becky down. The Judgment Day becomes such an over act that Dominic's feud with Rey Mysterio, his deadbeat dad, has, as we saw coming, definitely made something for Legado del Fantasma that wasn't going to happen otherwise.
I agree.
Somebody has spotted that there is a connection that can be made here over the respect for Lucha history. And by the way, this connection has not serviced the Legados all that well, so you've got two ways you go with this. They're either like the babyface defenders of a Rey Mysterio because he's constantly dealing with this four-on-one attack, or...
El Judgment Day?
Along those lines. Or eventually, they look at Rey Mysterio, not as like this deadbeat figure, but as just somebody like... After, say, once all the dust has settled with Dominic, it's like, we went to bat for you, and it never turned out in our favour, and then they batter him, and their heels all over again, and they're reheated, and they feud with Rey Mysterio plus whoever, you know? So there's numerous couple of ways, but the fact they were going nowhere. Look at what was happening with them at the same time with Hit Row and the Viking Raiders, and you only need to look at where they are now to compare who's had the benefit of the rub of the Judgment Day.
Yeah.
And again, like, people think we're just taking the piss or whatever, because it's still a funny bit that we get to swear when they come out. But honestly, like, we've... And another, like, WrestleMania speaks for itself, assuming that we get Rey and Dominic, and Christ, I cannot wait to fantasy book a Hall of Fame segment gone wrong.
Oh, my God.
Three singles matches. That stable speaks for itself.
Two things. Number one, since I've been smart enough to realise that, well, certainly prior to Papa H, there was no point in saying, oh, maybe this is heading here in a few months' time, right? I can probably think of, off the top of my head, between 3 and 5 SummerSlam matches led from what happened at WrestleMania that aren't just, I'll run that back.
Yeah.
Right? There's that, first of all, because you could easily, what's the thing that they've been doing with Legado and Rey the entire time? Mask stuff. Oh, wait, what's the one thing you could put on the line for Rey? Mm-hmm. He's not retiring, is he, at WrestleMania?
You would assume not.
2 weeks to book him. And by the way, Dad, hit me and I want you to retire. And number two, just as you were thinking there, I've had a brainwave yet again.
Go on.
So we love the Judgment Day, obviously. Unironically. Mm-hmm. Right? And so you want to say, give them all the belts, except you can't really. You can't give them any of the belts. Tag stuff, bit busy at the moment.
Yeah.
World titles, ditto. US title, IC title, be nice. But it wouldn't work, certainly not the IC title, US titles, you know, tied up until at least after WrestleMania, obviously. If only there was, Michael Hamlet, if only there was a belt they could bring back that, I don't know, could be given to a member of the Judgment Day who probably would maybe just about fit the requirements of, I don't know, a cruiserweight.
Oh, my God.
And I can't remember what colour that belt was.
Oh, my
though.
God. They bring back the purple cruiserweight title.
And he never defends it,
obviously. Dominic Mysterio never, like, Stephanie on with the women's title.
Yeah.
A total vanity plate. Unearthed, and it's got its soul has got to be saved.
We're all
saved.
Champions here. We're all champions.
Yeah, by one of the last great NXT Cruiserweight champions.
I'm gonna tweet it.
You tweet that,
right?
Ugly ass belt, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it'll work. In
it would.
Charlotte, this is like photos taken seconds before disaster. Charlotte goes backstage to see Postman Pierce and says, oh, "I'll have a bloody match. It's WrestleMania season after all." And he says, "All right, I'll look around and see if I can find someone." And then we got the Viking Raiders with Valhalla versus Ricochet and Braun Strowman, who are fast becoming, outside of the obvious ones, one of my favourite tag teams in WWE.
I would agree. And then I kind of hated an element of this match we're going to get to.
Well, yeah, I think I know where we're coming from here. The spot takes to a break early on in this match. Because Ricochet using his speed to get out of the way of Eric and Ivar, and then Strowman just picked him up and threw him.
It's great, man. I love their big man, little man spot. But I keep talking about the walking scent on that he does.
Yeah.
Like Ricochet, as if he's like the most natural thing in the world, walking his dog. Because broad shoulders, so he could take two clear steps on his broad shoulders and then flips.
So we come back from the break, and the Raiders have isolated Ricochet, and they've knocked Strowman off the apron, and there was a... Oof, I mean, it was meant to look like this, but that running crossbody splash against a barricade that did not move an inch.
No.
Because it's LED and stuff, isn't it? Like, at least the other ones you could have a bit of padding.
Well, I'm into those because I'm sick of barricades falling over. So it's quite nice to see them, like, stand up for themselves.
So it's Eric and Ricochet in the ring, and Strowman's, Ricochet's, there's no one there in my bloody corner. And Ricochet knocks Ivar off the apron, but Eric comes back with a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Ricochet fights back and gets to Strowman for the hot tag. He runs wild. They're all at the ringside. We know what's going to happen here. So Strowman tags in Ricochet, knocks Ivar over at ringside, goes to do the shoulder tackle onto Eric to knock him over the announce table. But at the last second, Valhalla pulls or pushes Eric out of the way, and Strowman just crashes into the announce table. Ricochet goes to the outside. Valhalla does some spooky bollocks, distracts him a little bit. So by the time he gets in and goes to hit the 450 on Ivar, he misses it. Ivar hits that spinning heel kick and the big splash for the 1-2-3. I suppose you could say the Vikings Valhalla's voodoo vexed Ricochet.
Vexed Ricochet.
Yeah, I couldn't get that last bit.
Oh, man, what a shame, what a shame.
What, the alliteration or the match?
Both. I'm with you 100% on Ricochet and Braun Strowman. I don't know if it's forever, but I certainly like it for now. Viking Raiders needed this win, but did we need Valhalla to be corrupting? Excuse me, how dare I? Corrupting Ricochet to get us it.
I'm glad that it wasn't anything like he was like, I'm in a trance.
Yeah,
like, it was very much like, I'm going to do something. He's like, okay, I'm going to get back in the ring now.
It was an implied trance. Yes. No, that's true, actually. I'll give you that. Like, it would have been... But this is the point. It would have been enough for her physical presence to throw him off. That why couldn't it have just been a physical presence? Why did we also have to worry about magic? Because it cannot do it. Like, and considering that I've just done the... This would get more credit if it was AEW. Let me now say this would get just as much criticism if it was in AEW.
Yeah.
Because I didn't love the House of Black teleporting in to go challenge accepted and then teleporting back out again on Dynamite, right? Didn't love that either. What is going on? What is going on in wrestling at the moment?
What has the spooky community got over wrestling bookers this year?
Yeah, it's everywhere, man. Like, not for the first time in wrestling, corruption is absolutely rife, but I think I'd prefer it was the financial kind.
You've got it in literally every single.
Well, it lives
show.
In Impact. That's fine.
But I'm literally talking about Dynamite. Yeah. Check. Rampage. Yeah, I suppose as well. Right. Raw. You've got. I mean, Bray Wyatt keeps doing stuff on there to target Bobby Lashley. So let's say that Viking Raiders on Valhalla specifically on.
Well, Uncle
on
Howdy is SmackDown. Bobby Lashley. Raw. Of Alexa course, Bliss. Yes. So double corruption from Howdy.
And then Isle of Dawn in NXT as well. Yeah. It's everywhere.
It's there's too much of it.
My least favorite thing.
Yeah. But as you say, it's so strange that it gets this like equal opportunity from every promoter to have a bash with it.
And I'll watch these four go again. I really enjoyed their dynamic working together.
I still can't make my mind up on the Viking Raiders. You know, it's like the work.
None of them are doing anything at WrestleMania, are they?
Probably not. For as much as the...
Again for Strowman.
It's weird.
He's
for
cursed.
Well, it's weird for Strowman and Ricochet, you know, because... And to go back to a point you were making about how you can't really do anything with the Judgment Day and the belts... Like, I sometimes wonder if maybe that you go back to that Raw and you find a way for the Judgment Day to win. The Sammy protecting the belts was incredible, and it's probably still my, I bet I'm criminally underrating something here, but that's still my favourite WWE match of the year, I think. Judgment Day versus the Uso / Sami Zayn from Raw is Triple X. But the magic was because there was only one set of belts on the line, wasn't there? Would Sammy and Kevin versus the Usos just for the SmackDown tag belts be losing much if it was just for them? Maybe it would. I don't know.
I think I have the same policy with Roman. I think you dilute the belts now and probably you just weaken the two WrestleMania
matches.
Which should both main event.
No.
Especially after this.
Well, Christ, like, I've made my...
You know what you do? You do Ricochet and Braun getting a tag title match. That's babyface versus babyface eventually. KO and Sammy. And then do or no, maybe not even that. Maybe they, you know, they do tag team stuff, but it's like, it clearly doesn't work. But yeah, it was fun while it lasted. Anyway, let's see who's going to be the person to face. There's a big battle royal. Who's going to face Cody at
Backlash
or whatever, yeah. And Braun's got the match won. And Ricochet 450s or does some mad bollocks onto the back of him, breaks up the pinfall, and Gunther or whoever it is you want to... Solo Sikoa, I'm sticking with that booking because I think it's genius whoever tweeted that to me. It's not my take, but I thought it was a really good idea. Solo Sikoa steals it. Well, not steals one, but wins it in the end. And you do Batista and Rey Mysterio. You're supposed to be my friend. And you turn Braun heel.
I do like that. I do like the idea that Braun batters Ricochet at the end of all this. Counter offer for the WrestleMania Battle Royal, if I may.
Are they doing that this year?
Well, not yet. But can I offer you a tag team Battle Royal?
Ooh.
Count to crown number one contenders that fits Ricochet and Braun on the card, fits the Viking Raiders, fits right now Alpha Academy, just off the top of my head, right? You've got all the tag teams on, like the two Imperium members, like, you know, that Gunther's going to go as
well. Rather good tag team in action on Raw tonight, I've seen.
Indeed. As won by Pretty Deadly or the Creeds.
Oh my God.
If you know, you know. NXT podcasts are available right now if you want to get up to speed. I don't know how far back you need to go to understand all the in-jokes. But
August 2021, I would say. Still in the archives.
Speaking of jokes, it was time for the Charlotte Flair
God.
Shotzi match. This is the match I thought, what's going on?
It just keeps happening. Like, before you do your recap, let's just, like, the elephant.
I haven't really got much of a recap. I can run you through the moves.
Well, the elephant in the room probably has a take on this. But I'll, like, get in there first. It's every Charlotte Flair match. We have
no,
this conversation.
Not on pay-per-view.
Yeah, all right. We have this conversation with every Charlotte Flair TV match. And I feel like a bastard for constantly. I don't like on these podcasts when we ever. I don't ever think we do. I think we're one of the better ones for this. IMO. Charts justify it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't at me. We don't isolate wrestlers for constant criticism.
No.
I don't think it's helpful, constructive. You can like and dislike a match, whatever.
I might have to interview them one day.
Well, yeah, that as well. But especially when I don't feel like it's particularly punching up. There's certain talent that are immune to that, and you can have a go at them as much as you want, like a John Cena or The Rock or whatever. But
yeah.
I just, everyone that is working as hard as they possibly can deserves a level of respect just for doing it. But I think we can be critical in good faith about these matches. And Charlotte Flair is having loads of...
She's not walking through that curtain saying, follow that.
Yeah. She's having, like, loads of bad matches in a way I can't understand. I could understand a dip in quality from someone's peak years. No one can stay at their best forever, and that's an unfair expectation. You have some runs that last longer than others. We used to say Charlotte Flair was the one that would have your every woman's best match was going to be Charlotte Flair, and there was loads of evidence to support that. And now, and I will accept that pay-per-view point to a degree, because I loved Charlotte Flair, Rhea Ripley at Money in the Bank 2021, but there are people that will fight for the, you know, the quite personal Becky Lynch brand v brand match.
Mm-hmm.
Some people quite liked Charlotte and Ronda at last year's Backlash. So there are these isolated things, but is that not, I put it to you, is that not the problem? If we're taking somebody with the push, the constant push, the constant sort of care and attention and title reigns of a Charlotte Flair, is it not the problem that we can basically narrow down the last sort of 3 or 4 years to maybe five earnestly great performances?
Yeah.
It's not enough. And when the bad ones are this bad, you have, like, it feels like a lot of questions are being asked about her. And I'm still a bit pissy and petty that I feel like Rhea Ripley was put in here to try and make this match feel elevated. I feel like...
I don't know what happened afterwards as well with that promo.
Well, I feel like both women's title matches have been hijacked by a plan changing of Rhea Ripley.
Yeah.
Having her destiny altered. I'll never be able to quite get over that, because I know what I was shown, and everybody knew what they were shown, and everybody wanted it. And I sensed it at the time. That was like, you know, let's get something big. You know the old gag about Shane McMahon on the whiteboard?
Yes.
Like, what's Shane's WrestleMania plans? I can actually understand that for Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
What are we doing with Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania? I think it's a fair question if she's fit and she's good to go. I wish they'd found something else. Like Rhea Ripley, Bianca Belair wasn't just a match, it was potentially the match. People will absolutely campaign this for the night one main event, and I think it'd be a mess.
Like, this is the thing, we sit here every week and talk about, specifically on Dynamite, just as an example, but it's, you know, a thing that's affected AEW and WWE. This isn't an AEW only problem, right? And we bemoan the fact that they just go, get some women's wrestling out of the way, right? Yeah. And I'm all for equality and all that sort of thing, right? Doesn't merit it. Neither match now merits it. On paper, both of them could main event and smash it out of the park. I have no doubt. Both matches. Yeah. Asuka and Bianca Belair and Charlotte and Rhea. But your main event should be the biggest match on the night. Mm-hmm. The biggest match on each night right now is all bloodline stuff.
Isn't it? They're just not... Neither of these stories are particularly connecting, and it doesn't feel like WWE are going to do much to change that. We're going to get this. They've been in place since the matches were announced, and it's like, it's that thing of, is the story moving on, or are you just like using synonyms this week and next week? And that's what we've got.
Yeah, I was gonna run through this match, but I don't want to. I feel like everyone's seen it on Twitter. The underwater slow motion, almost back and forth action.
Like what booking, right? We just praised it with Legado's and Judgment Day and all of that. Why haven't they, unless it's because they just don't care, why haven't they booked Charlotte Flair a logical route into that story? Because that's where Rhea is. So you show us something that theoretically means nothing, and then, it turns out it's because that's why they were sneaking Charlotte Flair in. Why don't they, off the top of my head, literally as we talk about this now, Zelina Vega is set to have a mixed tag match alongside Cruz del Toro, and she gets injured mysteriously, and we're all kind of, it's a weird kind of nudge that it was Rhea that did it to her because of a Judgment Day ongoing battle. And like, Cruz del Toro's out there for this mixed tag, and he's got nobody to partner with him, and Charlotte Flair says, I'll partner with you. And then they win a match, and you've established a sort of enough of a kinship with Charlotte Flair and the Legados that she comes out when the Judgment Day are there. And then all of a sudden, Charlotte and Rhea have got... But that's how they've booked quite a lot of things lately. And that's just off the top of my head. Like, it's supposed to overlap without you seeing, so that when it reveals itself, you go, oh, cool, yeah, this is a lived-in world. This is a bit of in-universe storytelling. It's just every single week, Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley kind of like glare at each other and get to trade very written lines. Yeah. It's not doing anything for Rhea. Like, no. She's over in spite of this. She's over, but she's over in spite of all of this. Match stunk. Match stunk.
Shotzi came back with the top rope, Hurricanrana. Flair hit it with some chops, fall away slam, spear, figure eight for the win. And Rhea had come out halfway through the match.
Everybody's seen them online. If you haven't, please go and check this out. Or, for that matter, if you listen to this review, aren't online in any sort of capacity with the wrestling...
Oh, must be nice.
...bubble, yeah. And you don't watch SmackDown, you listen to this. I kind of implore you to go and watch this to see what we're talking about.
Leave it rolling as well, because what comes next will cheer you up, I promise.
This sludgy, cooperative...
Oh, goodness.
Non-contact sports stuff between these two.
See better on NXT every week.
Yeah.
And far and away.
These are like developmental 6 months in the gym wrestlers working through very, very rehearsed spots, and this came across as more rehearsed.
So Flair gets on the mic, calls Rhea Ripley kid, says what's on your mind. Ripley says, I'm going to take the one thing that's important to you and take the title of WrestleMania. Flair kind of forgot our lines and then remembered, oh yeah, we're doing the Christian thing. I'll outwork anyone, male or female. I take seriously. You can tear anyone apart except for me, and then leaves. But like you say, you can't come out after that. I mean, obviously it was planned. It's not like they go, oh bollocks, we'll just do this. But like after that match, no one's shaking in their boots.
No, that's the problem. So much of her character is based on the fact that she's simply the best at this. Which is a nightmare when you've just watched a match like that. This needs a flash win. This needs Rhea Ripley to absolutely decimate Charlotte, and then they try again at Backlash with the pressure off. And like, let's see what they've got. This feud needs Rhea Ripley to have completely outmatched Charlotte, and then Charlotte to kind of give it the old, all right, no excuses. Anyone can beat anyone on any given night. Give me one more pop at you, and we'll see. Like, this is the real quiz type thing for Backlash, and then the rematch.
Double turn.
Smaller venue. Rematch. I mean, has it not already happened?
Well, granted.
Like, when WrestleMania is taking place, is it not going to feel like that in the building? Because I feel like it might.
Right, main event time. They recap, what happened on Monday Night Raw with Sami Zayn and Jay. And out comes the Bloodline, or out comes the Usos, I should say. The Bloodline, Jimmy says, are back together and are now in your city. Nice hearing that again. And Jay says, look, I know everyone wants to know why I kicked Sammy in the head, why I'd betray Sammy like that. By the way, I love the line, the prodigal brother returns.
Amazing.
It's such an incredible build. I wrote that down first thing as on my notes. It was that and then the vexing stuff, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? Yes.
Vexed by the Jericho Vortex.
He says, I've been struggling with my emotions. What would you do in my place? Because what would you do if one of your family members is in trouble? And then, I'm going to preempt this.
Oh, my God.
He did it, Hamlet, because he had to. He didn't want to, but he had no choice. Jimmy is his blood, his twin, his brother, not Sammy. Neither is anyone in the crowd. He didn't want to. He had to. Because Roman Reigns, newsflash, is a gaslighting prick. He said he was going to kill him, obviously, on this show. Jimmy, that was.
And he was watching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, let's get through this and I can get your thoughts. I can sense what you're going to say, but still. Yeah. He says, look, you want to blame me? Jey Uso, by the way, sensational promo.
Really strong here.
You don't know why I go through. You watch on TV and, yeah, you see our greatness. You don't see the struggle. The person I blame, says Jey, is Sami Zayn. I wasn't about to let my brother get clipped, great line, for Sammy. You know, Sammy's too selfish. All he had to do was fall in line. But Sammy doesn't know anything about that because Sammy's not blood and he never will be. And then Jimmy says, with the Sammy problem out of the way, we need to deal with Cody Rhodes. And he goes to continue, but out, well, wrestling is more than one royal family hits. Mm-hmm. Out comes Cody Rhodes, looking resplendent of as course, always. Of course. And he says, hey, if you're going to talk about me, you should probably talk directly to me. And by the way, I don't answer to you. I don't answer to Roman Reigns. I answer to each and every, well, the fans, but cliche and all that. But Cody Rhodes can get away with it because he's the best. And it sounds like, actually, they don't want to hear us talk. They want to see us fight, right? And Jimmy says, fine. Mm-hmm. Look at the numbers game. Come on down. We'll put you on the shelf. Let's have a bare-knuckle fight then. Mm-hmm. But then in comes Sami Zayn through the crowd, jumps on Jey. Cody gets involved. Big brawl. There's fighting on the announce tables. There's fighting in the crowd. I think it was it Cody and Jey? Because that would make sense that keep them apart. Mm-hmm. And Sammy and Jimmy, and they're brawling their crowd, and they brawl back to the ringside, and they brawl into the ring, and eventually Cody and Sammy, the ones standing tall, whilst officials hold the Usos back. What a close of the show, with no Roman Reigns whatsoever, but the sort of ghost at the feast.
God damn, where do I start with how much I love this segment? White hot brawl, and watching a bunch of over characters fight and be as over as they are in a WWE setting is never not great, because WWE should have been doing this every week for the past 20-odd years and just slept on it for decades. So getting this is so immensely satisfying. I literally don't know where to start, so I'll just try and go back and work chronologically through this. Can we show some respect for the anxious millennial Samoan, please? Because people are complex. Yeah. And how long has it been since WWE had characters that have more than one side to their personality? Jey Uso here, count the ways, man. Like, so straight away, he made it clear in the car park, but he didn't back down. He doubled down in a promo that this was for Jimmy Uso. He wasn't hiding away from or making a secret of the threat that Jimmy was under. He did this for his brother. And by the way, we knew he would come through for his brother because of that week on SmackDown where Jimmy was going to defend the tag titles by himself. And Jey showed up through the crowd. So there is already an inbuilt history that Jey will go, like, he'd been AWOL after the Rumble, but the one appearance he made was in that tag match. So we know that that's Jey Uso's modus operandi, protect Jimmy at all costs. Back then, it was protecting the belts. Now, he has no choice, as he put it, to protect Jimmy from Roman Reigns. So I love that straight away, there's no ambiguity here.
No.
Jey is doing this to protect Jimmy from Roman. How bad is that? How bad is it that he must protect his brother from the violence of somebody that's supposed to love them?
Mm.
That's so awful. That's such an awful situation. But what does this person, Jey Uso, do in an awful situation? He tries to blame us, because that's how that works. That cycle of abuse. He is suffering it and he's putting it onto somebody else. And when there is a cycle of abuse, what happens then? It trickles down and it gets passed on and passed on. And what's he doing? I'm doing this because of one person. Sami Zayn. Amazing again. So you've basically ticked every single box here. You've got somebody with these conflicting and contrasting emotions and not knowing to do what's right. And even though he's done what he believes is right, which is stand up for his brother, he still knows it's wrong, which is a very hard line to walk in WWE's broad brushstroke storytelling. And he's done it. Then you have the acknowledgement of the fact that, like, you are a victim of abuse and are passing abuse onto the people yourself. And then you have the trickle down, and there's always a person. In this case, it's Sami Zayn. Great, great, great fucking great in terms of Jey Uso. Then we've got, it's a pro wrestling show, so we're going to have some matches, aren't we? Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn versus the Usos is a kick-ass TV match. Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens versus the Usos and Solo Sikoa is a fantastic match. You know, the one I've avoided because, Christ, you sell out house shows or pay-per-views or Backlash, whatever the hell you want, when you do the Usos and Roman Reigns. If you want to do that against the babyface alliance of good when they finally brought the bloodline down, fine, do that too. I don't think I ever want that match because that match says to me that Jey and Roman have managed to make peace, and I don't want peace. I never want peace in the bloodline now. And that's the whole point of this, is they're supposed to be showing you peace. They're supposed to be showing you unity. They're supposed to be showing you a version of this group that can film that, and we've not seen it yet, film that WrestleMania Goes Hollywood skit, which is them in The Godfather, which we know is coming, all the mafioso overtones of all of this. And the whole point of those mafia films and dramas is that there is a constant sense of mistrust, unease. Somebody is a rat. Somebody wants the top chair. The top chair himself doesn't trust the people, his soldiers, his own people. The callback here of Jey Uso, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. Sammy, why couldn't you just fall in line, right? When did Sammy last fall in line? He last fell in line at War Games.
Mm-hmm.
Who did he fall in line to impress at War Games? It wasn't Roman Reigns. It was Jey Uso, which is why Roman Reigns continues to be threatened by Jey Uso, which is why Roman, knowing that he can't get to Jey, goes to Jimmy. And who is Jimmy going to be affecting? Jey f***ing Uso. And this is not even Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Like, fantastic A-star, S-tier storytelling from WWE.
I was terrified after the Royal Rumble. I thought they're going to blow this.
Moving pieces everywhere. Chessboard pieces all over the place, and they have moved every, for me anyway, they've moved every single one in the right pace, in the right position, every single time. I am flabbergasted at the success of this. The noise on Raw was this big moment of, I think everybody just shut up and went, oh, they've got this right. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like, maybe not. Maybe that's just, I'm blinking to it because I absolutely adore this story.
I think you're spot on.
But I think the follow-up was, well, how many times have we said that? How important is a follow-up? Our teams are terrible. And you get that one win and it's like, oh, we need to build on this. And you get beat 5-1 off your old manager comes to town. Like, the follow-up is just as important. And I thought they absolutely nailed this. I am desperate. I'm frothing at the gash for these men to be on Raw tonight just so I can get a little bit more of it.
Mm.
I absolutely love this. Cody, man. When he rips that shit, like, he's entering that, like, you know, Sidgwick talks about that Jericho promo where he's like, he calls AEW the Ellis Island, and he's like, there could be no bigger babyface in wrestling, and why that title? This company that he's created, he has to win that title, and he's so desperate to win it that he'll put up and never fight him for it again. He's hitting those markers for the frigging blue toy with the WWE logo on it that's slung over Roman's shoulder. Like,
coming out and doing, I don't listen to you, I listen to the fans. And people being like, yeah, he is, he's one of us.
This WrestleMania match, I think the world will stop spinning when Cody and Roman are faced off against one another. I cannot wait for this.
Brilliant ending to SmackDown. And like you say, leads into Raw tonight, which we'll be previewing a little bit later on. But let us know your thoughts on SmackDown on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hanfler at
Michael Hanfler.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Not only the Raw preview coming your way later on today, but also the AEW Rampage review with me and Michael Sidgwick. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Hanfler. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.